Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Na, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
I work for an environmental risk contractor that assesses long-term stability risks. Most of what we audit are sealed industrial spaces, old tunnels, refineries, quarry cuts, etc. Places that were shut down decades ago and are now the local council's problem whenever someone reports a smell in their cellar or a sinkhole opens in a field. Methane buildup is the usual concern. Sometimes groundwater ingress changes the internal pressure enough to compromise whatever plug was used to seal the site. In worst case scenarios, slow collapse can propagate outward through the surrounding soil, destabilizing nearby roads or foundations. That's the sort of thing we're meant to catch early, before an old shaft turns into a housing insurance claim. The site that came through last Tuesday didn't look unusual at first. It was a disused mine in rural Wales, sealed in 1948 after a subsidence event killed 3 surveyors during a post-war inspection. According to the closure report, all ventilation infrastructure had been dismantled prior to sealing. The primary shaft was backfilled with concrete and capped. Secondary access tunnels were collapsed using controlled charges. By 1953, groundwater ingress had flooded the lower workings completely, which should have been the end of it. Except a routine atmospheric scan, done remotely after a nearby planning application triggered a geological review, flagged something impossible. Breathable oxygen levels inside the sealed shaft, humidity cycling that suggested active airflow, and, most concerning of all, evidence of internal atmospheric circulation. There should have been no air movement at all. Even a partially flooded mine, left undisturbed for 70 years, settles into equilibrium. Gases stratify, moisture saturates the rock. Any residual pockets collapse or equalize through microfractures in the surrounding strata. But the data we pulled from the probe showed stable internal conditions. Stable, as if something inside was regulating the atmosphere. We requested a deeper telemetry pull from the municipal grid. The mine was drawing power. Not much, barely enough to flag against the regional usage. But it was there, a live electrical load originating from a site that had been officially disconnected from the grid before most of the surrounding villages were even electrified. Worse still, the draw wasn't constant. Every 60 to 90 seconds, the system spiked with a short surge, then settled back to baseline, again and again. That afternoon, we received a new assignment. We were instructed to descend to the lowest accessible level of the shaft, locate any active ventilation equipment that may have been installed post-closure, legally or otherwise, and disconnect it manually so the internal atmosphere could equalize naturally over time. If someone had been using old workings for storage or access, we'd find out soon enough. And if they hadn't, then something else was running the air down there. The original intake stack sat about 20 meters from the primary shaft cap, half hidden beneath a stand of shrub that had grown since the site was sealed. According to the decommission report, it had been stripped of all internal ducting before being filled with reinforced concrete and capped at both ends. Someone had gone a step further since then. There was a welded steel plate over the external mouth. Not professionally, but thoroughly enough that the seam had rusted into a continuous band. The entire thing had then been backfilled with aggregate. At a glance, it looked less like an intake and more like a short section of collapsed drainage pipe. We weren't expecting to find anything functional, but when I swept the thermal camera across the weld line, the seam resolved differently than the surrounding metal. A faint, uneven cooling pattern ran along the joint, thin enough that I thought it might have been a shadow at first. I adjusted the contrast and ran the pass again. Same result. The plate wasn't radiating heat. It was losing it. I crouched down and pressed the edge of my glove against the seam. The sensation was subtle. Not draft exactly, but there was resistance there. A pressure differential across a seal that, on paper, should have been airtight. I unpacked the handheld gauge and held the sensor head against the weld. The needle dipped inward immediately, just enough to register pulling toward the plate as if I'd brought it close to a vacuum line. The mine wasn't pushing gas out, it was drawing something in. I called it up to the surface lead and got silence for a few seconds while they reviewed the readings. If the internal system was pulling atmospheric mass downward through a sealed intake, then it wasn't just circulating air. It was actively venting something upward from below. And if we disconnected whatever was running down there without identifying what it was removing first, there was a chance that whatever the system had been bleeding off for the last 70 years would start accumulating inside the shaft instead. The primary shaft cap had to be cut in sections to avoid fracturing the surrounding concrete plug. It took most of the morning to expose enough of the original access ladder to get a harness line anchored properly. By the time I clipped in, the light had already started to fade behind the tree line. The first thing I noticed on the way down was the flood line. According to the closure logs, groundwater had filled the lower workings by the early 50s, enough that several inspection attempts in the following decade had been abandoned when the access tunnels became partially submerged. The interior walls should have shown mineral staining from decades of saturation. Instead, the high watermark sat well below the last recorded level, at least 20 meters lower than it had any right to be. Below that, the rock face wasn't slick with seepage or softened by erosion. It looked dry, desiccated in places, the sort of brittle surface you see in long ventilated tunnels where airflow had been moving continuously for years. My headlamp picked up on particulate drifting through the beam as I passed the first support frame. We would usually expect moisture or mist, but instead, it was dust. Fine enough that it lifted easily from the floor when I shifted my weight onto the next rung, hanging in the air instead of settling along the timber braces the way condensation usually does in flooded shafts. I paused at the first landing to check the meter clipped to my harness. Oxygen levels were stable, well within safe operating range. The barometric reading, though, had shifted since we opened the cap. Rather than falling the way you'd expect during a descent into open vertical space, it rose, gradually but steadily, with every 10 meters of depth. Enough that the readout updated twice before I even unspooled the next section of line. Something down there was displacing volume upward through the shaft, and whatever was pushing out had more mass than the air we'd come in with. The primary junction opened out beneath the ladder shaft into a low ceiling chamber that split into three documented routes, two of them terminating in collapsed access tunnels, the third leading toward the lowest operational level recorded prior to closure. I unhooked from the descent line and moved far enough into the chamber to avoid disturbing the air column directly beneath the shaft before taking the tracer pellets from my kit. They're designed to disperse slowly once exposed, fine enough to follow ambient airflow through confined spaces without dropping out immediately. In most sealed environments, they settle in minutes. I release the pinch into the junction and watch the particles pull together in an unusual, narrow stream. A slow but consistent draw toward the lowest documented chamber. Directional movement. Downward. And when I checked the barometric meter again, the pressure had climbed another increment since I'd left the ladder. To rule out instrument drift, I cracked open a small sample container at chest height. The lid flexed slightly as it came free, the sides pulled inward a fraction, enough to crease along one of the molded seams before equalizing. Something inside the tunnel system was increasing the atmospheric load within occupied space. Not by introducing additional oxygen, the meter still read safe, but by forcing mass into the chamber from somewhere deeper in the workings. And if the ventilation system was still active beyond the lower levels, then whatever it had been running for the last 70 years wasn't just circulating breathable air. It was removing something heavier than it, which meant cutting power from the surface without locating the active fans first risked trapping it below the ground with us. There wasn't any way to disconnect the system safely without going down to it. The access tunnel narrowed as it approached the section marked as collapsed in the 1961 inspection report. According to the archive logs, a roof failure had sealed this part of the workings entirely, a progressive cave-in that made any further descent structurally unsafe. The closure documentation treated it as a dead end from that point forward. Except, the obstruction wasn't there anymore. Where the collapse would have filled the tunnel from floor to ceiling, the rock had been cleared back. There were no fracture patterns, no scoring from cutting tools. The larger slabs had been shifted aside and stacked along the walls, leaving a passable route through the debris field. Beyond it, the tunnel ended at a steel bulkhead. A pressure-rated door that had been set directly into the exposed rock face, recessed along its edges with a composite seal that still held tension when I ran my light across it. The hinges were intact, the locking wheel sat flush against the frame. Stamped along the upper plate were inspection markings, dates that fell decades after the mine had officially been sealed. 1978, 1979, 1980. There was no installation record in any of the closure documents we'd reviewed, no ownership transfer, no refitting permits. Nothing that explained how a reinforced pressure door had been placed this far below the ground without anyone noticing. I stepped closer and pressed my palm against the metal. Through the glove, I could feel a low, mechanical vibration, faint but steady. Ventilation noise carrying through from whatever lay on the other side. The bulkhead opened into a chamber that had no business existing in a mine, sealed before the first motorway was laid within 50 miles of it. The ventilation assembly sat bolted to the rock like it had been installed yesterday. Four industrial fans mounted in sequence along a reinforced housing, drive belts tensioned correctly, casings free of corrosion. The lubricant port showed a fresh sheen beneath my lamp. There wasn't dust-caked residue or dried grease, but a thin, reflective film that caught the light when I moved. Every one of them was running, running hard enough that the hum traveled up through the soles of my boots as soon as I stepped onto the chamber floor. The airflow wasn't being circulated laterally through the tunnels. It was being forced downward. Beyond the housing, the floor dropped away into a vertical shaft cut cleanly through bedrock, a cylindrical bore vanishing into the dark below the reach of my lamp. I lifted the thermal camera and angled it toward the opening. For a moment, the display showed nothing but the ambient gradient of the chamber walls. Then, something passed beneath the lens. A slow bloom of heat, rising from somewhere below the map depths of the mine, fading again before it reached the lip of the shaft. I stepped closer. The pressure change made itself known before the meter updated, a dull ache building behind the eyes, a tightening along the jaw hinge, as though the helmet strap had been cinched one notch too far. The vibration underfoot deepened, resolving into a low, mechanical tremor that traveled through the support frame and into my harness. I took the sample jar from my kit and held it out over the opening. When I twisted the lid free, the container just collapsed. The sides pulled inward so sharply that one of the molded ridges split along its seam before I could close it again, the plastic warping in on itself as if I'd cracked it open at depth underwater. Whatever was rising through that shaft wasn't replacing the air. It was displacing it, forcing something denser upward into the tunnels faster than the system could bleed it off. The seismic logger chirped once at my hip, sharp enough to cut through the fan noise. I pulled it free just as the readout updated. A micro tremor. Origin depth, below the lowest mapped level of the mine. Before I could flag it up to the surface team, something moved beneath the shaft. The pressure waves struck from below without warning. A hard, concussive lift that rattled the fan housing and kicked a skin of dust up from the chamber floor. The support frame shuddered as anchor bolts along the shaft lip strained outward in their sockets, the metal whining against the rock as if something beneath had pushed up against the entire column at once. On the thermal display, the shaft filled with another rising bloom, hotter this time, climbing fast enough to smear across the screen before fading into the ambient gradient of the chamber. The fans changed pitch immediately. Airflow reversed with a metallic clatter that ran the length of the assembly as the system shifted from intake to exhaust. The pressure behind my eyes eased by a fraction as the tunnel system began to vent upward through the primary shaft. From somewhere below, a sound followed it. Slow and rhythmic, something periodic, spaced far enough apart to register as deliberate, carrying up through the bore like breath moving through a pipe. Another tremor registered on the logger. This time, the displacement that followed came with it. A heavy push that forced the air in the chamber toward the exhaust ducts, lifting loose debris from the floor in a narrow spiral as the system fought to bleed off the load. Something below the shaft was moving. Each upward motion drove an entire column of compressed gas ahead of it, forcing mass into the tunnel network faster than it could equalize naturally. The ventilation system wasn't just circulating breathable air. It was venting atmospheric load generated by whatever was coming up from beneath the mapped geology. The exhaust cycle that followed the last displacement didn't stop at the chamber. I heard it tear through the access tunnel behind me. A sudden, violent shift in pressure that traveled the length of the passage like a physical blow. The bulkhead I'd come through slammed shut a second later, the seal hitting the frame with enough force to rattle dust from the ceiling support. I turned back immediately and grabbed for the manual override. The wheel held fast, locked in place by the load on the other side. I leaned into it anyway, felt the metal flex beneath my grip without turning as the pressure differential forced the seal tighter into its seat. Then, the intake resumed. The air in the chamber drew hard toward the shaft as the fans reversed and the tunnel ahead, the one leading back toward the primary ladder, shifted along its support frames. The steel bracing flexed inward just enough to narrow the passage, rock grinding against the struts as the load settled back into the access route. Dust lifted from the floor, but didn't fall. Another intake surge hit. The frame ahead bowed again, further this time, until the passage pinched almost shut before easing by a few centimeters when the system tried to compensate. I took a step toward it and stopped. Behind me, the fan pitch changed. The cycling interval was gone. There was no pause between intake and exhaust, no return to neutral flow. The system had shifted into constant draw, pulling downward through the bore hard enough that the upper tunnels began to take the strain. The next intake drove the pressure back up the access route. The support frame ahead of me creaked as the rock around it compressed, the floor grating lifting under my weight before settling again. If the load kept propagating upward through the shaft, it wouldn't stay contained below ground. It would rupture through the primary works, through the surface plug. I checked the passage again. Between intake surges, it held shape for a moment or two before narrowing again as the system fought to maintain the gradient. It wasn't stable. Retreat meant risking collapse inside a tunnel that had already started to deform under the load. Staying meant letting the pressure build until the shaft failed outright. The only route that wasn't compressing lay past the ventilation housing, deeper into the lower works. If the system was trying to hold something down there, then the only way out was to go down to it. The reinforced passage beyond the ventilation housing wasn't taking the load the way the upper tunnels had, at least not yet. The next intake surge drove the pressure through the corridor hard enough that the inspection hatches set into the walls rattled in their frames, the composite seals along their edges flexing outward as the internal gradient shifted. Overhead, the conduit brackets bowed away from the rock face by a few millimeters before settling again when the system compensated. Dust lifted from the floor grating. Rather than fall when the intake eased, it hung there, drawn upward into a slow spiral that stretched down the length of the corridor toward the bore. Another surge followed. This one shifted the tunnel geometry enough that I felt it through my boots, the floor tilting a fraction as the rock behind the steel framing took the strain. I moved when the pressure dropped, advancing a few meters before the next intake hit and the passage narrowed again around the bracing. The pattern repeated. Move when the system bled off the load. Stop when the intake drew it back down. Behind me, a support anchor tore free from the wall with a sharp metallic crack that echoed through the corridor, followed by the dull scrape of rock shearing along the ceiling seam. Dust spilled into the passageway as a section of the upper support frame dropped half an inch in its mount. The route I'd come through narrowed perfectly where it settled. Ahead of me, though, the reinforced section held its shape a moment longer between surges, the pressure redirecting itself down through the lower ducts instead of forcing its way up through the corridor. The system was letting the upper works deform, to keep whatever was below from pushing through them. The corridor ended at the sealed operations room. I forced the latch open between intake surges and stepped inside just as the pressure climbed again, the door dragging against its frame before sealing behind me. The instrumentation along the far wall was still live. Barometric recorders flickered across a spread of analog dials and digital readouts, each one tied back to the ventilation system running somewhere above. Intake ratios sat well below the marked tolerance line, the indicator hovering just inside the acceptable range. I pulled the nearest logbook from the shelf and flipped it open. Maintenance notes ran alongside the displacement records, annotations in different hands across the years, all of which were absent from any records we had access to on the surface. Displacement amplitude increases when intake drops below recommended gradient. Further down, the recorded draw matched the reading in front of me. Minimum containment threshold. Another intake surge pushed through the station. The shelving behind me creaked as the load shifted, unsecured binders bowing inward where the pressure flexed the metal uprights. Along the doorframe, the composite seal compressed hard enough that the inner lining lifted away from the rock by a few millimeters before settling again when the system compensated. I scanned the intake channels on the console. The feed line marked for the lower containment ducts blinked amber. Active, but not fully engaged. Part of the system had gone offline. The next displacement registered on the seismic logger at my hip, shallower than the last, which meant whatever was generating the load beneath the shaft had already migrated upward through the surrounding strata. Another intake hit. The door seal flexed again in its mount. The system was still running, but it wasn't holding it. A second passage branched off from the rear of the station, terminating at a guardrail set into the floor. Beyond it, the containment board dropped away into darkness, a vertical cut driven through bedrock to a depth the original mine had never reached. I brought a thermal camera up and angled it toward the shaft. A broad heat signature filled the lower half of the display. It wasn't a sharp point source, but a diffuse mass that shifted along the inner wall before fading into the ambient gradient above. The next intake surge hit before I could adjust the focus. The floor grating beneath my boots bowed upward a fraction as the pressure drove back through the station, the rail vibrating hard enough that I felt it in my teeth. The seismic logger didn't chirp. It rolled. The readout climbed slower rather than spiking, as it had during earlier impacts. No fracture signature or rockfall. Displacement from somewhere below the map depth of the mine. A sound followed it up the bore, low and periodic, arriving seconds before the logger updated. Movement carried through the air ahead of the load. I checked the barometric meter. The intake held steady, but the pressure inside the station didn't drop with it. Whatever the system was drawing down now wasn't enough to counter what was being forced upward through the shaft. Something beneath the cavern was beginning to overcome the containment gradient. The system was failing. There was a service cradle fixed to the inner wall of the bore, a maintenance rig tied to the same conduit that fed the ventilation assembly above. I clipped in and dropped. The drill shaft widened as I descended, the scoring along its walls giving way to smoother stone where the cut had opened into a natural cavity beneath the collapse zone. The bore terminated in a cavern. A natural bedrock chamber formed far below the original workings, its ceiling lost beyond the reach of my lamp. Containment ducts had been driven into the perimeter at uneven intervals, their housing sunk directly into the rock and tied back into the intake network above. At the center of it, something had been embedded in the stone. A vast organic mass looked embedded just behind the stone. The skin looked stiff, but it was hard to make out exactly what it was. The surrounding strata had fractured outward from it over time, worn smooth in places where repeated impact had driven it against the bedrock again and again. It expanded, slowly, a shallow lift that pushed the surrounding rock outward by millimeters before settling back into place through a long contraction. Each motion forced air ahead of it. I slowly approached, light in hand, waving the beam over segments, trying to piece it together in my mind's eye. My light agitated a certain spot, a horizontal seam that shuddered for a moment. I fixed my gaze upon it, waiting to see what came through, hoping for an answer, but was only met by infinite questions. Through the opening of the seam, which only split a little, I could make out what was behind it. The pupil contracting as light fell into its vacuum. The pressure rose, the ground shuddering, all emanating from what I had just found. I felt the pressure shift in my ears a second before the logger above registered the displacement. The same load had been driving up through the shaft and into the tunnels overhead. I stumbled back, my light giving me a wider view of the bigger picture. Ridges that made no sense, wrinkles that seemed random, painted the picture of what had been in front of me the whole time. The opening was the size of a house, gave a window to one eye and part of its brow. Humanoid in nature, but so far removed from our species, something so huge that to picture it in its entirety would drive me mad. A sound came with the next burst of pressure, and what it was doing finally made sense. It was simply just breathing, sucking in air through its buried nose, expanding its body little by little, then releasing, repeatedly, over and over, moving sediment and rock in microfractions to escape. The mine above had given it a chance, loosened up the formations so that if it did get any sort of leverage, it would easily climb out, be free, and do God knows what. The ventilation system was in place to keep the structure sound. It did nothing to stop its escape, but slowed it down considerably, countering its efforts in destabilizing the area. Another intake surge hit. The expansion followed, but the contraction didn't complete. It stalled midway through the cycle, tension gathering along the embedded ridges where the mass met the surrounding stone. This time, the surface didn't settle back. The rock around it shifted instead, fractured seams widening as the pressure forced its way outward along the existing scoring paths. Whatever had been compressing passively beneath the mine was no longer settling between cycles. It was beginning to separate itself from the bedrock that had held it in place. The next expansion came harder, not enough to throw me from the rig, but enough that the guide track shuddered against this mount as the cavern floor shifted beneath the mass at its center. The logger above registered the displacement almost immediately this time, the amplitude climbing past anything recorded during the descent. I brought the thermal camera back up toward the bore. The intake was still drawing, but the pressure above hadn't dropped. Whatever the system was venting off through the shaft wasn't keeping pace with what was being forced upward from below. Along the cavern perimeter, several of the intake ducts sat dark, their feed lines inactive where the conduit had gone dead years before. The remaining housing strained against the load, composite seals flexing outward as the gradient failed to hold. I thought about the logbook in the station above. Maintain negative pressure gradient at all times. Increased intake reduces upward displacement. The next expansion began before the last had settled. The rock around the embodied ridges shifted again, fractured seams widening along the scoring paths that ran out from the mass and into the cavern wall. If the intake dropped any further, if the system couldn't draw fast enough to hold the load below the shaft, then the rupture wouldn't stay down here. The titan of a creature would force its way up through the primary works, through the Surface blog and be free. I hauled myself back up the bore, the service rig juddering against the guide track as the pressure climbed again beneath me. The intake controls at the station were exactly where I'd left them, amber channels still blinking along the lower duct feed. I grabbed the manual override and forced it forward. It resisted, held in place by the load now pushing up through the shaft. The adjustment rail creaked as I leaned into it, the locking teeth slipping one notch before catching again. Below me, the next expansion began. I felt it through the floor, the station shifting a fraction as the cavern took the strain. Something in the shelving behind me rattled loose as the displacement propagated upward through the bore. I forced the override again. This time, it moved. The intake channel opened fully, and somewhere above, the fans answered, the pitch climbing as the system drove itself harder against the lower ducts. The barometric readout dropped in small increments. On the seismic logger, the next displacement registered late, the amplitude rounding off before settling back toward baseline. I brought the thermal camera up toward the shaft. The expansion cycle that followed came shorter than the last, but it didn't carry the same weight. And when the contraction began, it finished. I felt it immediately. The pressure shift that had been bowing the station walls between cycles now easing before it could take hold. The floor settled beneath my boots instead of lifting, the barometric readout stepping down another increment as the system held the increased draw. Up in the corridor, the change followed. The reinforced passage no longer narrowed along its support frames when the intake engaged. Steel bracing that had been flexing inward between cycles held its shape, the rock around it settling instead of grinding against the mounts. By the time I reached the ventilation chamber, the bulkhead seal that had locked me below had begun to release. The manual override turned under my hand, stiff but no longer pinned by the gradient. The door opened a fraction before the intake resumed, the pressure equalizing across the frame instead of forcing it shut. Containment had taken the load back, and for the first time since the descent, the upper works weren't carrying heavy pressure anymore. Even as I moved back through the reinforced corridor, the ventilation system kept drawing, the fans above maintaining a steady pull against the lower ducts without slipping back into the unstable cycling that had sealed the route behind me. The next displacement came late, and when it did, it carried less force, the pressure shift barely registering in my ears before the logger updated. By the time I reached the primary junction, the interval between movements had widened enough that the dust hanging along the tunnel floor began to settle again between surges. I checked the thermal camera one last time before climbing. The bloom that rose from the cavern below still spread across the display, but it no longer climbed. It thinned before reaching the shaft lip, fading back into the surrounding gradient as the system bled off the load. Whatever was moving down there hadn't stopped. It was still expanding and contracting, still forcing displacement through the rock with each cycle. But the shaft wasn't taking it anymore. The ventilation was. And as long as the draw held, the chamber below would keep it down there. For now. The return climb was quieter. My radio crackled back to life halfway up the primary shaft. Static first, then the surface lead cutting through it.
"Are you still with us? We lost you after the pressure spike. I'm here," I said. My voice sounded thinner than I expected inside the helmet. "Roots compromised below the ventilation chamber. Structural integrity's not holding under load." There was a pause on the line.
"You need us to send anyone down?"
I looked back once without answering. Something was found beneath that collapse zone. Someone, not the council, nor the company that had owned the site, had come down afterward and drilled through bedrock to reach it, installed a pressure gradient, built a ventilation system that didn't circulate air so much as remove it. Not to keep the tunnels habitable, but to bleed off the displacement every time it pushed upward. Every 90 seconds. I thought back to the reports we had in the briefing, the reason for closure. It's safe to assume it was all fake. Something presented for the mine to close operations and the mysterious benefactor to begin operations of containment. I thought about the inspection dates on the bulkhead, the intake tolerances scrawled in the margins of logbooks, the fact that the system had been allowed to fall partially offline until the draw dropped low enough that whatever was down there had started forcing its way up again. "No," I said. "This site's not safe to survey further. Recommend full reseal on the primary shaft and intake stack. Pull the line and leave the grid connected intact." Another pause. "You're saying keep it powered?" "I'm saying cut anything that lets air in from the surface," I replied. "But don't touch the supply feed to the lower system. Whatever's running down there is the only thing stopping the mine from total collapse." Not the truth, but not entirely a lie. There was a moment of silence on the channel as that settled. "Understood," the lead said eventually. "We'll mark it as a structural risk." I didn't answer. By the time I reached the surface, the intake weld was already being prepped for reinforcement, the concrete plug around the shaft ready to be recast. The fans below never changed pitch, and every minute and a half or so, if you stood close enough to the cap, you could feel the ground breathe.